This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Augustine Burroughs made a habit of turning his personal pain into public entertainment. He's written numerous memoirs, including the best-selling Running with Scissors. That book chronicled his dysfunctional adolescence, and Hollywood liked it so much they turned it into a movie. He followed up with Dry, where he gave readers a glimpse into his struggles with alcoholism. But Burroughs says he got sick of writing about himself, and he figured he could take all that pain and hard-won lessons and use them to help people. So he wrote This Is How. And if you need to know how to survive a mental hospital, or how to be fat, or how to feel sorry for yourself, then this is the book for you. Augustine Burroughs is going to be signing books at the Arts Center in Carrboro tonight, but first joins us in the studio. Welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
This book is written as a kind of anti-self-help book. What was your experience with self-help literature before this?
Walking past it at a bookstore on a shelf. I mean, I've never read self-help. I don't think I've ever read a single self-help book. I read part of one when I was, you know, a kid. Yeah. My parents had, I mean, both of my parents, you know, read a lot. So they had a lot of books. And I think they had, you know, one. And it was, I guess it's self-help. It was called, Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Sex But Were Afraid to Ask.
Yeah.
Right? So I read like, because, you know, it had sex in the title. So,
right.
Of course, I was a kid.
And afraid, yeah.
Yeah, right. So pick it up. And I just, you know. Yeah. But I've never found them appealing, you know.
Right. And you said something about the BBC piece that attracted your attention, the fact that they're kind of counterintuitive or counterproductive
mm-hmm.
for some people.
Yeah. I mean, the book starts off with, I talk about being in an elevator and a woman next to me says, whatever it is, it can't be that bad. And, I mean, she was talking about, you know, my face, and I must have just been exuding this, you know, heartbreak that I was feeling. And she suggested I smile. And I just wanted to close her head in the doors of the elevator. But why? Yeah. And I wondered after, you know, I got back to the room, why was I reacting so strongly? And I came across this article of reporting on this research that they did in Canada that said that affirmations, you know, which are the sort of telling yourself the opposite of what you feel. If you right. feel fat and sluggish, you know, you look in the mirror and say, I feel trim and healthy and fit. And, you know, allegedly, maybe it, I guess, comes true. And the study found that they are successful for people who have high self-esteem, but they have the opposite effect for people with low self-esteem.
Ooh.
In other words, the people who need it. And it's
exactly.
not surprising to me because you're lying to yourself. Yeah. I mean, you know, anytime you tell yourself, put on a fake smile, you're betraying yourself, you know, and you need to acknowledge exactly how you feel and never be afraid, you know, because it can be kind of scary to admit just how scared you are or how nervous or how insecure. But,
the question is, what do you do when you get there? It's one thing to sort of have tea with your anger, but then what?
Well, you know what it is? It's sort of like if we said right now, you know what, let's get in the car, let's drive to California. It would be really helpful to know where we are. So when you know where what you yeah. feel, you know, you kind of know, okay, well, this is what I've got to fix. Because you can live for years being really, really depressed, right. like really depressed, and not know it. I have I wrote about a friend of mine. He was he's a psychiatrist, and he was just about to start a new job, and he went to work that day, and there had been a paperwork mix up. They weren't expecting him, and they hadn't hired him, and he killed himself. And you know that just had to have been building. I mean, just. You know, something was going on inside of him that he wasn't aware of. And that's you know, that's one of the dangers, I think, of being oblivious to your own actual mm-hmm. feelings. I mean, so even though it might be scary or not, you know, to admit what you feel, it's good to know the depths of your feelings, whatever they are.
You talk about how honest people can be living dishonest lives.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is that there are – we're all surrounded by sort of inaccuracies and assumptions. And I mean, from the day you're born, you know, you learn stuff. And I came from sort of exceptional circumstances in that my father was very absent. He was very, you know, sort of heavy alcoholic. And my mother was mentally ill. And, you know, as I was when I was 12, 13, I was sent to live with her psychiatrist. and he was nuts. So that's sort of my running with scissors past. But the point of that is that I didn't have any adult in my life that I could go to and ask for help or guidance or anything. So I had to figure it out myself. And kids don't lie to themselves. You know, kids are, you know, that's something we learn, you know. And so I kind of slipped through the cracks in that area, and I've never been afraid to level with myself in terms of, you know, what my circumstances really were, talents I had or didn't have. That's not to say I haven't lied to myself. I've done it, you know, countless times throughout my life. But it's easy to grow up believing certain things are true about yourself. You know, maybe you were taught, oh, it's your older sister that has the talent. You don't really have the talent. Or maybe, you know, well, we don't come from a smart family, so that's not the kind of life for you. And you wouldn't even think to question that.
Right.
I mean, there was a young person in New York City who was asking me about a scheduling problems she was having in her school, you know, like law school. But the whole point was that she didn't even want to be a lawyer. She was doing it for her family. So that's where she hadn't been able to solve this scheduling problem. And it's like, well, that's because you don't want to be a lawyer.
Right. Well, it's kind of the Iago effect, don't you think? I mean, you look at what's wrong and you have too many reasons.
What's Iago?
Iago is the character in Othello who causes...
What's Othello? No.
And he causes a lot of trouble and mayhem, and a lot of people die because he's planning lies about people, and there's no real motive. You keep asking yourselves, and critics through the centuries have said, what is motivating Iago? And he gives you a bunch of motives. He spends the whole play telling you what's wrong with him. He's been passed over for promotion. He doesn't think he's being treated. And by the time you're done, he's giving you far too many reasons, and none of them seem to be the ultimate cause for his malignant behavior.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's almost like, it's like victimhood, blaming.
Yeah.
I feel strongly that it doesn't matter if you are victimized. If something, you know, happened to you and it was absolutely their fault and you were victimized, you still have to be the one to clean up the mess.
Yeah.
You still have to, because who else will? You know, it's like seeking apologies or seeking closure, you know? I mean, or healing. Healing is the word. I think healing is like, that represents sort of my, that's, I think of healing as representing all self-help, which is horribly judgmental of me. I mean, I know I'm sure there are tons of very fine self-help authors, and I'm just lumping them all into the same awful category.
I think there's a book called How to Find the Best Self-Help Books, and it's a real guide to
oh, seriously? Is there really?
I'm making that
probably.
Up. I'm making it up. But yeah, there probably is. But, you know, your memoirs in many ways sort of put us in mind of the things, the themes that you're talking about here. Why turn to this? Because your memoirs have been so successful. What led you to write this book?
I mean, I've had a wonderful time writing the memoirs and, you know, sharing my stories with people, but a couple of years ago when I began this, my life changed so dramatically. I mean, the person I spent, I was with for 10 years and we built a house together was so unhappy with me and had been for most of those 10, you know, for 9 years, you know, for a long time. And I think we were both unhappy, but I didn't know it. You know, I was trying to tell myself, this is how happy, normal people live. This is getting older. This is what it's like. And when I left that, my whole life, just like everything I had built, just kind of, you know, I had to take it all apart. And I just didn't have the interest anymore to write about myself and my stories, because it seemed like I could be more useful. I mean, the number one question that I get whenever I go, you know, anywhere in the world, it's all over the place. People ask the same thing. How did you survive? But then it's fill in the blank. So sometimes alcoholism or sexual abuse or whatever, bang, you know. And I just really want to answer that. I mean, I've spent so many years telling people what I've survived, and I really do want to take people through my thinking, because I think my thinking is going to be really useful for people. The book it's the same thing. The book is really one concept. It's about just reaching the actual truth of whatever your circumstances are. And it's sounds easy, but sometimes it is, but it can be very tricky, and it can be hidden underneath what you think is true. So I just hammer away at that from different perspectives. And I mean, I even talk about things I don't have experience with, like, you know, what if your child dies? And the reason I feel like I can talk about that is because although I don't have a child, I've lost that person who was unlosable, who meant everything, you know. And my wisdom from that was that there are some things you're not going to heal from. Don't expect to heal. Like, don't, that's not going to happen. Don't wait for that like I did, you know, and you can actually be okay with holes in you like Swiss cheese.
And of course, in your memoirs, you point out that you're openly gay. The state of North Carolina has just passed an amendment that bans gay marriage. And I wonder what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, it's, you know, I can understand people wanting marriage to be the same. But I have to always ask, like, okay, so why would you – I mean, one argument I heard was that, well, you know, we don't want to have to, for the rights of some, change what's been, you know, the institution for everyone. And I would then ask, well, now why though? Why? I mean, everyone had buggies. You know, I mean, why wouldn't that evolve as well? And I do think that if you're really honest about it, if we really get to the truth, I think it's because a lot of people are probably afraid or are disgusted by gay people, or don't really maybe think they know any, and they don't, they think it, you know, it's immoral. And that's fine. That's fine to feel that way if that's what you feel. It's a shame, I think. I think it's a missed opportunity, but I don't see the reason. I see a theological reason for disallowing gay marriage, and I don't think, unfortunately, that that's compatible with our Constitution. And I, it's really one of these things. I don't think that the states should vote. I don't think people should vote on issues that are related, you know, to rights. I think this is one of those things where even if 90% of the population thinks, you know, wants, it needs to be the sort of morally right way. You can't have one set of privileges extended to one group of citizens in our country and not the others.
Augustine Burroughs, thanks so much for being on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Augustine Burroughs' new book, This Is How, A Proven Aid in Overcoming Shyness, Molestation, Fatness, Spinsterhood, and Grief. On the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, stay tuned.